Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they're counterproductive, and that none of them can be fixed. If you're in agreement, or if you'd like to challenge that position, you're invited to participate in this discussion. Our number is 877-300-7645. Oh, my goodness. So there's a petition to shut down a radio station in the nation's capital because they do a sports show and say Redskins. We're just pathetic. There are words that bother me. There are things that bother me, that when they are said in a positive vein, I find to be awesomely irritating. Like when the President of the United States speaks favorably about Islam, I want to scream. Because I know that Muhammad was a mass murdering, raping, enslaving terrorist. And so when people misappropriate information and names and words and give them a positive spin when they should be condemned, that's irritating. But come on. Using the federal government, which can't do anything right, and the Federal Communications Commission to ban a sports talk station, for crying out loud. We're not talking about a station promoting jihad. We're not talking about a station promoting, let's bring Ebola patients into the United States and see how many Americans catch the disease. We're talking about a sports talk station, for crying out loud. Now, personally, I don't like the name Redskins. And I've got a vote in this one. I'm Sioux Indian. I don't like the name Indian, actually. To tell you the truth, I should just say I'm Sioux. You know, Indian is the name of the people way across the pond, down there in the subcontinent of India. I don't even like the term Native Americans. But my tribe was called Sioux. The color of our skin ought to be irrelevant. And when people are distinguished by the color of their skin, I think that's a problem. Now, we do need, when we have cultures that are expressing collective behaviors that are far outside of norms, whether it be positive or negative, that we do need a way to distinguish. Like yesterday we spent first 2 hours of the show speaking about the problem in what's called the African American or black community of this country, where the president wants people to believe that there's a justice gap when in fact there isn't, and ignore the fact that there is a criminal gap. And we went over the numbers. I mean, blacks are 500-600% more likely to commit violent crimes than our Caucasians. But unless we have a different way to designate an ethnic group that is behaving in a manner where collectively we have a problem, you know, I understand how you have to use skin color and the shades of it in that particular situation. But there's really no justification for naming a sports team yellow skins, brown skins, black skins, or red skins. I got no issue with Chiefs. I got no issue with Seminoles. I've got no issue with Apaches. I've got an issue with Redskins. That said, the way that you influence someone to stop doing something that you think is inappropriate is you speak out against it. Use your words.
Go ahead. You know, if you keep talking like this, you're going to potentially stop our show. You said Redskins like 20 times now.
Good. Right? Yeah, let them do it.
I think it's so ridiculous that they're trying to stop a sports show from talking about a sports team that's in their city. Right. It's not like this is some...
Right. Some, heck, I don't like the name Redskins, and I'm saying it's stupid.
No, and it's like the...
I'm Indian, and I'm saying it's stupid. You know, I'm a Sioux.
You told me about the commercial that you saw to where all, you know, the Chiefs, Braves, Seminoles, all these things are all...
we're
all
called by many... We call ourselves by many names.
By many names. Yeah, right. And the only name that we've never called ourselves is Redskins.
And Redskins.
And when you made that argument and you pointed that out, and that's all the reason I need right there to know that the name should change.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I was on the fence on this. Even though I am Sue, even though I am a NFL fan, even though I'm a freedom of speech advocate, I was on the fence on this issue until I saw that ad. And I just said, that's brilliant. You know, sometimes when people put things in the right context and you're confronted with them, that ad gave no wiggle room. And I changed my position. I said, you know, I'm opposed to the name. They're right. The name is wrong. Am I offended by it? No. But is it wrong? Yes. And so we should just use our words. That commercial did a marvelous job of using words. Don't elicit the U.S. government to ban a radio show because they cover the local sports market and refer to the most popular, probably now the second most popular team in that sports market. You've got the Washington Nationals, who are more popular right at the moment. Yeah, stupid.
It is, and with the point that they made in that, you have to concede to that point. You have to say, all right, okay, maybe this is wrong. Maybe.
Right. Snyder's being a horse's patootie. I mean, it's wrong. Just admit that it's wrong and move on. And change the name. There's lots of swell names out there.
The whole thing to where he's like, oh, well, we'd lose so much. No, you won't lose money because everybody that likes your team is going to buy all the new merchandise.
Gear. All right, new gear.
I guarantee they will, because that's how sports fans work. Yeah. That's why teams release their jerseys almost, you know, all the time. I mean, fans buy stuff to the teams they want to support. Right. It doesn't matter the name.
Yeah, my favorite team jersey logo name combination of those things in terms of how a name and a logo and uniforms are worked in together would be the Chicago Blackhawks. I think that is a beautiful presentation. I mean, it shows the Blackhawks in a very regal fashion, and it clearly is a team named after a local tribe, and it is presenting that tribe in a very positive light. And I've got no issue with that.
It was actually, he actually named it after his flight squadron.
Okay.
He was in the military, and he named it after his flight squadron.
You've got to be careful when you open your yap on a show like this. Well, but, yeah, okay, I stand corrected.
But,
all right.
Well,
so the black, but was the flight squadron named after
the
Blackfeet? Yes, okay. So indirectly.
But,
all right.
So indirectly. But, so he named it after, he used the logo that they had for their squadron and everything like that. But he's, with that said, he's done everything he can to make sure that he doesn't go into that offensive side of the name. And he does stuff. The Blackhawks work with the tribe that it is inadvertently named after. So, I mean, and that's, is there a Redskin tribe? I mean, no, there's not.
No, there is a Florida Seminoles. Now, America treated the Seminoles as badly as any tribe in the nation. The history of America and the U.S. government and the Seminoles is, if you want to read something that will make you ashamed to be an American, read that history. And it's, but the whole history of the colonists and then the government of the United States and the native peoples that were here on this continent is repulsive. And it's just absolutely grotesquely immoral and repulsive. It's one of the things, you know, when people say that this is manifest destiny and that we are God's country and God bless America, and you read the history and you say, you know, if this is God's country, I want nothing to do with that God. That's a really disgusting God. And it's just not true. But anyway, I am always willing to be corrected. I've been corrected now twice. I'm here already this morning. But the fact of the matter is, Redskins is a poor choice of a name. But we ought not elicit the Federal Communications Commission to ban a radio station for stating the name of the team while it is so named. And in the meantime, you know, may those who agree that you ought not name a team after a group of people's skin tone, may they prevail with the reason. You know, the NFL right now needs a win. And the NFL really needs a public relations win. And changing the name of the Redskins would be a positive. Of course, if you're a sports franchise, the nation's leading sports franchise, and the nation's largest media market, you don't have a team. You could probably put a team in that market and apologize for not having one for all of this period of time. Scott, yesterday, in this first segment, we discussed the probability, the possibility that an Ebola patient had been flown from Liberia to the Dallas area and was now in a Dallas hospital. It was not released and not confirmed as to whether or not he actually had Ebola. It is now confirmed. But because of some very twisted rules within the medical profession, the American people's safety is being not considered. And so the identity of the individual and where that individual spent the past 5 or 6 days is not being disclosed. So as the nation ponders, A, why an Ebola patient, an Ebola victim, is allowed to enter the United States, and B, why there does not seem to be any releases of information such that the residents of the Dallas area could make good decisions regarding their health, the identity of the individual, and his whereabouts over the last 5 days have not been released. I think that's sick. Yes, I know that in America we have confidentiality laws in terms of the medical profession, and they are way out of kilter, particularly in the psychological range. But now in the communicable disease area, the rights of the many vastly exceeds the rights of the individual. And in this particular case, the many deserve to know who that individual is. They need to know where he went, where he was during the 4 or 5 days prior to entering the hospital. They have a right to know. And to not disclose it is disgusting. What if you were with him? Don't you think that you need to protect, and say you're married and you have children, you don't think it's appropriate that you protect your wife and your children? It's revolting that we hide behind this non-disclosure when the rights of the many vastly exceed the confidentiality and the privacy of the individual. This individual does not deserve secrecy. He made a horrible decision, not once, but twice. He deliberately went to Liberia in the midst of an Ebola outbreak, and he returned back to America after being exposed to Ebola. These are two incredibly stupid choices. He does not deserve privacy. And those that he may have infected deserve to know. CNN's senior medical correspondent, Elizabeth Cohen, said that she and two colleagues recently returned from reporting in Liberia. They got a mixed bag of responses from Customs and Border Protection officers. We all said that we were journalists who had been in Liberia covering the Ebola outbreak, Cohen said. One of my colleagues was told, oh, okay, welcome back, sir, and was just let in. That was it. Cohen herself got a different response. I was told, wait a minute, I think I got an email on this, the Border Patrol officer said, and consulted with his colleagues. That officer later told her that she should check her system for 21 days. I said, what should I be checking? He said, I'm not sure, ma'am. The third colleague merely had his boots checked to see if there was mud on them. Three entirely different responses. They can't all be the way to do it, Cohen said. I was surprised at how chaotic it all was. So if you think that your country is protecting you, think again. It is certainly possible someone had contact. Now, this is a statement that I think is important for you to hear. The whole CNN article was to say, oh, you ought not be worried. I know Americans are worried that this man stricken with Ebola got on a commercial flight and was in public facilities from airports to taxi cabs to going about his business. But you just shouldn't be concerned. This isn't like the flu. So this is a statement from a fellow named Friedman. You may recall Friedman. He is the head of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. Friedman said, it is certainly possible that someone who had contact with this individual could develop Ebola in the coming weeks. Sobering. Dateline Dallas, three Dallas fire rescue paramedics and several emergency room workers at the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital are off work and under observation after making contact with the patient being treated for Ebola. None of those individuals has been identified. Tuesday night, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta flew a team of 10 Ebola experts to help the officials and hospital staff. There are times when the rights of the many exceed the rights of the few. Such is the case with Ebola. Such is the case with the most deadly and most corrosive pathogen ever to infect humanity, Islam. The rights of the many exceed the rights of the few. Scott mentioned during the break that one of the just painful experiences today is to read people's comments following articles. It's almost every news media has a comment section following articles, and it's painful because of just how collectively indoctrinated and stupid and immoral even literate people who read the news are. And he says one of the things that was troubling is that a number of people jumped this self-righteous conclusion that now that Ebola is in America, Americans will be motivated to find a cure. And it's completely ignorant and irresponsible. First of all, ZMapp was developed in a San Diego-based research facility long before Ebola was in the United States, long before any Ebola outbreak had killed more than a few hundred people. There was no economic benefit for doing so. There was no save your own life and your daughter's life benefit for doing so. It was something that could be resolved, they thought, and they sought to resolve it, and they did so. And then to make this kind of a comment, what an ignoramus. We have Glenn on the line who is calling in from a long way away from Dallas. You're probably feeling all comfy there. You don't have a loved one in Texas. I do. Hello, Glenn.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Glenn.
Can you hear me? Hello? Yes.
Yeah, you're washing your hands to make sure that no one has infected you with Ebola in your hospital.
No, I'm Glenn from Philadelphia.
Oh, yes.
Well, I would have, however, I can add put a geographic twist on this. My parents and I, parents who live in Texas, have recently attempted to dissuade a family member who is now on a safari trip to Kenya and Tanzania to see the wildlife refugees.
Yeah, I've done it. Of all of the travels that I've done in my life, and I've been in 150 countries, virtually every country in the world, of all of the travels that I've ever done, I'm going to tell you the most memorable time was my safari through Tanzania and Kenya. That is really inspiring. Extraordinary.
He's reprising a trip he did in his youth, about 20-plus years ago, probably for the same reason as what you're saying. However, they are just a little bit to the right, east of Uganda, where there is some Ebola. Mm-hmm. And we were encouraging him, ironically enough, to consider canceling the trip. And I sent him a CDC page about the distribution of Ebola in Africa. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we're going to follow recommendations of the World Health Organization and the CDC, and they didn't get flagged, so they decided to go ahead and go. And then, ironically enough, while he's over there, American Ebola case zero walks into a hospital 3 hours from where my parents live.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Just amazing. Yeah, and what's the most amazing about it is that there's absolutely no screening mechanisms set up in the United States to prevent it.
Right, right. And it's funny, I'm just mentally picturing, I love the story you said, that they have been, observing the, the paramedics or whatever. No, you're not observe. You quarantine. You quarantine. You don't observe.
Absolutely.
You put them all up together in an apartment, put them in. Do whatever, get hotel rooms have the government pay for them and say, you stay here, don't leave this room.
The reality is that there are some diseases. Sometimes those diseases are viruses, sometimes they're religions. But there are diseases that are so deadly, so destructive, so merciless that the rights of the individuals are less important than the rights of the many. And Ebola is one of those things. We have to take the rights of those individuals who were unfortunately subjected to this man's stupidity away to protect the many.
Well, do they have, do the EMTs, paramedics, what about the people who were in the E-room? What about the people,
Of course.
Do these paramedics, do they have families? Do they have children? Are they staying in their own homes?
We're total lockdown on information, which is you want to create a sense of panic.
Panic.
The best way to do it is to withhold important information. And this is, once again, the rights of the many exceed the rights of the few. The rights of that one idiot's right to privacy is superseded by the rest of the people who live in Texas. And so, I'm sorry, you have to disclose who he is. You have to say, here is where he was every minute of every day from the time this moron arrived back in the United States.
Right.
And if you were exposed to him, you need to identify yourself. We understand that you don't want to do that because you're going to be quarantined for 21 days. But you got to think of the lives of all of those you love and all those around you. If you were near this man, you need to identify yourself and protect your family and those you love and your neighbors.
Right. Did you see that CNN headline this morning? Is it now time to panic? I always like to joke. I always say, wait.
I read the article. And the whole article is saying, no, this is not like the flu. It's unlikely that somebody sitting in the airplane with him would have contracted the disease. And no, it's not time to worry. And then it ends with the head of the CDC saying, it's absolutely possible that he infected other people. That's why we're sending the staff here. That's why we've got these individuals set apart. That, yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, exactly. And
when people describe, yeah, and you know, you work in the healthcare business, but when mm-hmm. when people describe and have described over the last 20 or 30 years, before even this huge outbreak, and they say, you know, talk about deadly pathogens, and even when folks studying prophecy try to figure out what the deadly pathogen that is going to sweep the world might be that Yahusha referred to in his Olivet Discourse.
Yes.
Right. And Ebola is almost always amongst the short list of two or three
flu.
Things that, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
flu.
Yeah, a form of avian flu will make the short list. Smallpox will typically make the short list, the plague and Ebola.
Well, look, Ebola, the German epidemiologist who in Deutsche Welle recently said he could see it to killing 5 million people. Now, roughly approximately a million people die every month in this world. So that's only about 5 months worth of death. So, mm-hmm. you know, if they're looking to depopulate the earth, Ebola is not going to do it.
No.
You know, I don't think we're, no, it's going to be an airborne plague of some sort, or even if you look at the Black Death, it was.
Yeah, but let me share something with you. Let me share something with you. I mentioned it briefly on the show about a month ago. There was a study on Ebola done in the United States.
Yeah, the airborne monkeys. Yeah.
Yeah, the airborne study on monkeys, and they found that Ebola absolutely can be passed on. Without contact of fluids amongst monkeys, which are
the military has to go in two times and kill off the monkeys. Yeah,
yeah. The second. Monkeys are the second most prone non-human carrier of Ebola. I think it's a form of bat that is the most prevalent carrier of Ebola. But in the monkeys, it was found that absolutely it can be passed on in an airborne fashion without fluid contact. So this fluid only is not true. And so could Ebola evolve? Could the virus evolve such that it could become a more worldwide deadly pandemic? Yes. Now, I happen to agree with you. I don't think that Ebola is the worldwide plague that Yahusha was speaking about. I think it's far more likely to be an influenza of some sort. But nonetheless, it is possible that this could become far worse by becoming airborne.
Well, it's just terrifying because it's hemorrhagic. And I'm wondering if something has changed with this, because what I haven't heard, you mentioned even one time, but doctors online and all that, on air and stuff, is the aspect of known as the symptom known as disseminated intravascular coagulation, DIC. The blood, you know, it's hemorrhagic, you bleed out all the orifices of the body, but then also blood turns to jello inside the vessel. And I'm not hearing much about that. That's a real game changer. And I'm wondering if this form of Ebola is not producing the DIC, because I'm not hearing about it at all.
Yeah, but, I haven't heard that either. You know, the thing about Ebola is that there are considerable differences in varieties. And I made this statement before, and it might sound to people like you've lost your mind. But you know, typically Ebola claims between 90% and 95% of its of those infected. In this particular case, it's claiming the lives between 70% and 75% of those infected. That's actually worse. And the reason it's worse is that if you know that somebody has less than a 5% chance of surviving, sacrificing the individual for the benefit of the masses, it becomes a much easier decision for people. But when a person has a 25% to 30% chance of survival, then it's in that individual's interest and their family's interest to do everything they can to help that person recover, which makes far more people susceptible to the disease than would have been susceptible elsewhere. So the low kill rate of this strain of Ebola is why it has become so deadly.
Right, because people aren't reacting in a more quarantining fashion.
Correct.
I think, one thing about a flu is that these flus, The flus are taking out, so take out obviously the elderly, the very young, but they're
right.
You know, teenagers, because it tricks the immune system to mounting this exaggerated cytokine storm. Your own immune system produces this overblown cytokine storm. So, you know, middle-aged adults tend to survive it quite well. But when in children and teens, where they're producing this, you know, the stronger immune response is occurring, that it kills off more children. So, like the pediatric flu epidemic of several years ago killed off more children than people realize.
Yeah. So it's so amazing that the great flu epidemic is still called the Spanish flu, when in fact it had nothing to do with Spain and had all to do with the U.S. military.
Right.
And, you know, here we have Ebola, and we've got a very similar set of circumstances, but this time we're doing it deliberately by engaging the U.S. military in the Ebola outbreak.
Yeah, we're going to paint it with bullets. I love to look at my watch and say, now is not the time to panic, and glance at my watch and say, okay, now's the time to panic.
Now's the time to, you know, what we need is much better systems to keep Ebola out of the United States, and then a much better disclosure of who has it so that those who have been exposed can protect those they love. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering This. The President of the United States says that the jihadists have corrupted a great religion. So I thought we'd just look at a couple of places where Islam has raised its ugly head in the last 24 hours to really identify the root cause of the terrorism that is being inflicted on Muslims, to find out if we can identify the actual motivation. Dateline Baghdad, at least 35 people were murdered in a wave of car bomb and mortar attacks in the mainly Shiite Muslim districts in Baghdad. This occurred yesterday. It was one of the most violent days in the capital since the U.S.-led forces began bombing the Islamic State. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, so, boy, we're going to have to really scratch our heads to see what inspired these suicide bombings. The Islamic State, however, is considered a likely perpetrator. This article says they're an ultra-radical. Ultra-radical. We're not just radical Islam now, but an ultra-radical Sunni Muslim militant organization that seethed to swaths of northern Iraq. Ultra radical. Well, radical is really from the Latin root for root, and therefore would infer something that is right at the root of the issue. It's not how the word is understood. You know, sometimes a word's etymological past and a word's perception are hugely different. And such is the case with radical. It is understood by most people that something is a radical departure from the norm, and that radical is used in the sense of being an extreme corruption of something, something that is extraordinarily divergent from the correct normal view, perception, or nature of a religion. It's usually used in the context of religion or politics. And as such, from a perception point of view, the Islamic State is the antithesis of radical. They aren't a corruption of Islam, they're fundamentalist. They know the Quran and live the Quran. They know the Hadith and live the Hadith. They know Muhammad. They follow Muhammad. Their actions, their words, their deeds, their motivations, their goals, their declarative statements, their publications, everything about them is wholly and completely consistent with Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, the Hadith, and Islam. So if it was the Islamic State that perpetrated these bombings, then we have our answer. The president lied and the perpetrator was Islam. If it was a Christian organization that perpetrated the bombings against the Shias, then maybe we ought to look in a different direction. But there are no Christians left in Iraq. Okay, maybe it was the Zoroastrians. Nah, I don't think so. Why would they go after the Sunnis as opposed to the Shias? Maybe it was the Kurds, even though they are Sunni Muslims. Nah, they're trying to ally at the moment with the Shias to fight the Sunnis. Who do you suppose could have been responsible for these terrorist act of a suicide bombing in Baghdad targeting Shia civilians? I mean, the President of the United States says that these Muslims have corrupted their religion, so we better have somebody else out there. What do we have? There is no Al-Qaeda presence in Iraq, so it's not Al-Qaeda. Who? What? If not Islam. There were no immediate claims of responsibility. And yet the Islamic militants who had seized a large swath of northern Iraq in June claimed several suicide bombings in the capital earlier this year. So we're going to say that the Islamic State's probably responsible. Two car bombs exploded in busy streets in one district, killing 20 people and mutilating 35, according to medical sources. There was also a mortar attack in a Sab al-Bor neighborhood of northern Baghdad that killed 5 people and mutilated 15 more. Perhaps the problem really is Islam.